I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, this is Richard Deitch and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producers are Patrick Antonetti and Sean Cherry. Today's guest, it is a familiar one, John Orand from the Sports Business Daily and Sports Business Journal is back. Read his fine work at that excellent publication. They, if you're a subscriber, they just have a new website relaunch, which I'm sure they're incredibly excited about. A lot more video, a lot more podcasting on there. So shout out to your designers and IT people, John. And welcome back to the Sports Media Podcast. We are going to, John, stick to NFL media rights. I know you love this topic. You've done some great reporting on it, so I'm excited to talk to you today.
There's a story a day, Richard, that comes out, it seems, on inching it forward. But it's ultimately the same story that we've been talking about for the past 6 months, I think.
John, I'm going to cut you a break here. We're not going to talk about any PR people, and we're not going to do politics. So congrats
awesome.
To you.
Great.
You're going to be okay.
I don't have to rank the PR people at the end of the show?
Not this week.
All right, good, good.
All right, so let's do a little bit of a broad overview here. As we are taping this, heading into the first week of March, last week of February, where do things stand in the negotiations between the television, we'll call them television entities, but between the media companies interested in the NFL and the NFL itself?
Let's start with the easy ones. CBS, they were desperate to keep the NFL. CBS Sports is run by Sean McManus. He came aboard when the CBS didn't have the NFL. He remembered what time was like when CBS didn't have the NFL, and they just merged with Viacom, and they needed to keep the NFL, and they pretty quickly came to a deal. So nothing's been finalized, nothing's been signed, but that's pretty close to being done, I'm told. NBC, sort of the same way. They have Sunday Night Football. They have the number one primetime show in television. I believe it's a decade now. It's in whatever the most recent release that NBC has just set out. And it's that is a TV record. And in TV terms, it's ridiculous. It's a record by many, many years. And NBC wanted to keep it. It's an anchor of their schedule. I don't think the NFL really had a lot of interest in moving it off of NBC because it's been so successful on NBC. And so they probably aren't as close as CBS, but they're pretty close to getting everything done. And to me, the interesting part of those two deals, I'm being told, is that Peacock, this NBC streaming service, and Paramount Plus, CBS's streaming service, both are going to be carrying games. And in fact, yesterday, Paramount Plus said that Paramount Plus was going to carry all the NFL games that CBS had.
All right, so that's two of the networks. What about what else is going on? We haven't, in that scenario, we haven't hit Fox. We haven't hit ESPN. I'll ask you some specific questions about these, but we haven't hit Fox. We haven't hit ESPN, and we haven't hit a potential digital player like Amazon.
Right, or Thursday Night Football. So Fox is not quite there yet. They are not nearly as close as CBS or NBC, but the pushback on both sides doesn't appear to be the type of pushback that would kill this deal. Fox, back in the early 1990s, they basically created a network based on the NFL. They've always been very agreeable to paying whatever increase the NFL needed or wanted. Back in 1994, they were almost primarily responsible for getting the rights fees to where they are today with what was then like an ungodly sum of about $300 million per season. And so they're going to get a deal done, almost certainly. Nobody thinks they aren't. The wild card right now is
so.
Monday
John,
night.
Hold up before you go. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but let's hold off on ESPN because I have a number of questions on them. So go to whatever's going to happen with Amazon, and then I'll focus specifically on Disney.
You know what I love? I said wild card, and you immediately picked ESPN, and you were right. I was going to ESPN, but then you have the streaming service, and you have Thursday Night Football, which none of the TV partners want. The TV partners don't like Thursday Night Football, primarily because they can't make money off of it. Advertisers aren't rushing to them because you can see it pretty much everywhere. It's on Amazon, it's on Twitch, it's on NFL Network, and you know part of the reason that they exclusive networks want to pay for exclusivity. So even though it is the second highest rated primetime show on broadcast television, it's not nearly as valuable to Fox as, say, as Sunday Night Football is to NBC. So that's sort of open right now. All signs are pointing to that going to a streaming service, and all signs are pointing to Amazon Prime as being that streaming service. And what we don't know is who's going to produce those games, how many of those games will NFL Network get, because NFL Network still needs to have a certain number of live games. I believe it's around 5 or 6 live games that they have on its schedule in order to stay on cable systems and satellite systems. And then there's also, you know, some international games which we're going to be put into a package, and there are a bunch of other games out there, and I'm not quite sure if this is going to be a traditional Thursday night game, Thursday night package, or if it's going to be sort of a mishmash of different things that Amazon can use to, you know, to try to, you know, bring more subscribers to Prime, and also to get those subscribers to, you know, shop for whatever jersey or get more retail revenue from that.
Before we get to Disney, John, what kind of years are we looking at with CBS and NBC and Fox? What kind of term do you think this lands on?
What I've been hearing is right around like 8 years. That's not certain, though. It could be as much as 10. It could go down to 6, but I'm hearing like probably between 8 and 10 is where I'd place my bets on this. I think if the networks are going to pay this much money, they want it long term. And I think the NFL, you know, nobody knows how what everything's going to look like. You know, if the NFL is solely dependent on streaming, you know, these rights fees are going to go down. So I think that there's a sense, not just among the NFL, but all properties, that they want to tie this type of money up for as long as they can, because, you know, the next rights fee, if ESPN is in, say, 40 million homes, or who knows how far cord cutting is going to go, the next rights fee could be a rough one.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
All right, so let's get to Disney. Speaking of ESPN, and because this is the real interesting story, and you've been doing a lot of really good reporting on this. Last week in your newsletter, one of your media newsletters that I certainly highly recommend, you wrote that the gap between Disney and the NFL is around $1 billion per year. So the first question is, that's a monstrous amount of money. Can that be bridged? Do you envision the two sides coming together and finding whatever the deal point would be for Disney/ESPN and the NFL?
Yes. If I were betting right now, I would say that there's probably a 90% chance or higher that they end up cutting a deal. I think what the the report that I had, the report that Alex Sherman had in CNBC is just kind of, you know, it's a negotiation. But boy, when you see that $1 billion number, Richard, it's a negotiation. That's a massive. I mean, no other league gets $1 billion a year, and that's a massive amount of money. And so the key that I'm looking for is who has the leverage here. And for as long as you and I have been writing about this, the NFL has had massive leverage because they're the most popular programming, and everybody can point to what happened to NBC when they didn't have it back in the early 2000s, what happened to CBS when they didn't have it back in the late 1990s. But that was like two decades ago. That was a long time ago that the whole media business has changed. And there is a belief or a sense among analysts and among some at ESPN that there is a price that's too high for them, and they would be willing to walk away if the price is remains too high.
So let's examine that, because that's really fascinating. What would ESPN look like, John, without an NFL rights contract?
I think they would. I have to be honest here. I'm always honest with you, Richard. That's one of my verbal tics, by the way, that I'm trying to get out of my vocabulary. If I were advising ESPN, I would really consider that, you know, you say no to the NFL, you have $2.5 billion burning a hole in your pocket. You're going to have to give cable operators and satellite distributors a certain rebate. So all of a sudden, that's going to come down a little bit more. But then you just go and you blow Fox out of the water for the Big Ten the next time those rights come up. You blow Fox out of the water for the Pac-12 the next time those rights come up. You get the NHL coming over, and you still have probably close to $1 billion left over, almost. And then you own Saturday. Sunday, you didn't own anyway. I mean, you had some highlight rights, I guess, for the NFL, but everybody's watching everything else. And you basically get rid of the fourth best package. You can either pay up and get the fourth best package in the NFL, or you can own college football, which is the second most popular sport in America by far. I think it's in terms of the leverage the NFL has, like, I don't think it is as huge as it once was. Certainly not with as far as ESPN is concerned.
That is interesting, John. Let me ask you this, and I don't know the answer to this. I probably should. Is there a deal that ESPN and the NFL could make, which clearly this would be good for ESPN. I don't know if this is good for the NFL, where they just make a deal for, I'm just going to put in layperson's terms, like unlimited highlights, where ESPN can get as many highlights as they want, but they can't broadcast the games. They're willing to pay a fortune for that, but it's not the over-the-top ridiculous fortune that comes with Monday Night Football and the Super Bowl. Like, does that deal exist, or would the NFL, because of the importance of their content, be like, hey, if you're not going to be part of our rotation here, we're not cutting any kind of highlight deal for you?
I think there's a big potential of that, because, you know, in these types of negotiations, it's not win-win when somebody says no to the other one. So you kind of want to get something out with that. And the problem with that, there is certainly that deal to be had. The problem that I see with that is that, you know, the gulf between the ESPN and the NFL in terms of the value of highlight rights is even bigger than the gulf of $1 billion. I mean, the NFL believes that the value of the highlight rights really just kind of makes the ESPN machine run year-round, all through the day, and makes it tick. ESPN is like looking at, you can see instant highlights on Twitter. You can follow highlights on your phone throughout the week. It's not policed that greatly. The value to ESPN of the highlights all comes from that exclusivity, and that exclusivity isn't necessarily there. Plus, under Jimmy Pitaro and all the cost cutting, there's been a move away from not a move away. The focus has been much more on live event programming and much less on studio programming. They still care about studio programming, but you're going to spend all that money for afternoon shows that don't come close to 1 million viewers. If you're ESPN, you don't value the highlight rights as much as you think that, as much as the NFL thinks that they should. And I think that would be a very, very big bridge to gap.
So, John, let's, again, if we're playing the scenario out, if ESPN walked away, and I think both of us don't think that will happen, but let's say they did, do you think then that changes the salary structure at ESPN for NFL talent? Meaning, like, all of a sudden, the massive amount of people they have for Sunday Countdown, NFL Countdown, and NFL Live, and the many different NFL analysts they have who float through on GetUp and ESPN Radio. You know, if you don't have the NFL rights, like in theory, John, you don't need as many people to do those shows. And then even if you sort of want to extend it, you could probably make it an excuse to bring down salary costs, given you're paying NFL people, you know, a ton of money. Probably if you averaged all the ESPN on-air front-facing types, like sport, if you went sport by sport, John, that would probably be the highest average in the NFL.
Yeah, this is such a fun conversation to have. I feel it's like hugely important to reiterate, probably for the fifth time. I think ESPN's going to do the deal.
It's not 90%. It's going to happen. Right.
I all of my sources, even the most pessimistic sources, they think ESPN are going to do the deal. So this is a fun exercise, and I'm going to get into it. There is a chance that they walk, but it's a very, very unlikely chance. And if ESPN walks on the NFL and ESPN passes on the highlight rights, ESPN is not going to have, I can't imagine ESPN putting the same kind of emphasis on NFL Live. Why would they do that when they own college football? So NFL Live, I could see that turning into, you know, college football live. I could see the NBA The Jump, you know, expanding to 2 hours. I think that they would certainly cover the NFL because they do have a news operation. Scott Van Pelt's show will cover the NFL, but in terms of, you know, the program schedule up and down the block, they're going to much more heavily emphasize a lot of the shows, a lot of the sports that they have rights to, which are the NBA, college football, college basketball, potentially the NHL when that comes up. We'll see.
All right, John, there is something I wanted to ask you also about ESPN, and it's this. If ESPN does not have Monday Night Football, how does that impact the places that carry ESPN? Would they have to pay some of these carriage places some kind of, maybe fine is the wrong word, John, but would they have to pay them some kind of money if ESPN does not have Monday Night Football? Because I imagine there must be deal points where Monday Night Football is part of the, you know, $10 or so that ESPN gets per subscriber.
Richard, this is the reason why ESPNers believe that they have more leverage than they did in 2011, the last time they did an NFL deal. In 2011, they had clauses in their contracts with satellite and cable distributors that said if they did not have the NFL, those distributors could just drop ESPN, full stop. That's terrifying because, you know, you go up against Charlie Ergen at Dish Network, he would have done that. And then you have to, like, negotiate to try to get that in. Nobody wanted to mess with that. Today, those clauses have been taken out of all those contracts. And so if ESPN doesn't have the NFL programming, you know, right now they get $10 a sub. You know, the distributors could make that go down to, say, $7 a sub, which is still the highest fee for cable channels by far. But it would be a drop. But the fact that they can't just drop them wholesale, gives ESPN a lot more leverage to drive a harder bargain.
John, if ESPN, I keep saying ESPN, I should really say Disney. If Disney ultimately makes this deal, it's going to cost them a fortune. Do you think this impacts their other businesses, or are they making a calculation that post COVID, our amusement parks will come back and people will be there? Like the reality is, like, if you make that kind of expenditure, it does probably have to impact another part of the business, right?
You would think. I don't think that they would make an expenditure that can't pay for itself. So I think another intriguing part of this, and I think one of the reasons that you know, we're all kind of writing about the the stalemate between the NFL and ESPN is that Bob Iger is no longer running a Disney. That's now being run by Bob Chapek. And if you read this Wall Street Journal had a great profile on him last weekend that I encourage people to read. And it doesn't really get into sports, but it does show Chapek is a completely unemotional executive. And he's a bottom-line guy, and he's not going to get tied into this the romance around Monday Night Football being ABC/Disney/ESPN property for, 40 years or however long. That sort of adding everything here. Bob Iger, he was with Disney when they lost Sunday Night Football to NBC and ended up getting sort of the cable package. And if you read his autobiography, he considers that one of the biggest mistakes of his professional career. And so, with that knowledge, I gotta believe he would do whatever it takes to try to keep the NFL. Bob Chapek doesn't have that sort of emotional baggage there with this. I think that he's going to look at a bottom line number and make a decision based on that.
John, when you are sort of taking a guess on the increase that the NFL will ultimately get, like average wide across the board, what do you think that is? I mean, I know they were looking, based on your reporting, to get like a 75% increase over what ESPN currently pays for that deal. But if you had to sort of average out the whatever the increase will be across the board, what do you think the NFL ultimately gets here?
It's hard to put a percentage on it because ESPN is such a wild card, and frankly, Amazon's such a wild card. So I'm not sure if I would be throwing a dart blindfolded giving you a number there. But I can tell you that of the major TV packages, CBS, NBC, Fox, and ESPN, I expect all of them to be at or over $2 billion, which would be for NBC, CBS, and Fox. And this has been reported by others. That's a 100% increase. That's double the money that they're paying, and that's on an average annual basis.
Crazy, crazy numbers. All right, let's sort of finish up on this topic here. Viacom CBS said on Wednesday that they're going to lean heavily on live NFL and soccer programming to drive subscriptions to Paramount Plus. That streaming service officially begins the first week of March. And I think you were on this call. There were CBS executives who said that the NFL basically drives more streaming subscriptions than any other programming. So while the NFL, John, will still be available on CBS over the air, the Viacom CBS believes that by having these games on their streaming service, they think that's an additive incentive to get people to subscribe.
Yeah, you know what's been really hard for me to get my arms around somebody, we're about the same age, I think. It's difficult to get over-the-air broadcast.
I like to think
channel.
I'm younger, John, but go ahead.
I'm putting you right in my demo, Richard. Sorry, but it's difficult to watch over-the-air television nowadays. Like you need sort of, you used to be able to just turn on a TV and adjust rabbit ears, and now like it's free over-the-air TV, and it's not, if all of a sudden my cable operator drops CBS. Like, I don't know. I would have to Google how can I get. It's not like a super easy process. And so when I see something like Paramount Plus saying, we're going to stream every NFL game, and using that as a line of demarcation of saying like, boy, this is really going to push people to our service, they're going after cord cutters that find it difficult, I think, to get the over-the-air broadcast channel. And what they said yesterday, which I did find fascinating, because like you said, it's free TV. Just get it. They said the NFL is the single biggest programming genre to drive subscriptions than everything else that Viacom and CBS have, including Comedy Central, MTV, any of the movies from Paramount. They have a ton of content. But it still is NFL football that you can see for free on CBS for Paramount on CBS.
Amazing. This is then, and to just draw the line then to why these companies pay so much money for this programming. It's literally part of their It's part of their strategy. It's part of their streaming strategy. It's a different topic, John. But since we're talking about it, we'll just do one very quick one on this. I'm fascinated, John, by the gold rush for soccer rights, particularly foreign leagues. ESPN did a great job, I thought, early on, securing a lot of interesting leagues for ESPN Plus and building that service up to make it really attractive for soccer fans. We know the Peacock has the Premier League, which is probably the most popular, not probably, it is the most popular foreign playing league in the United States. And now Paramount.
Don't forget the Mexican League, Richard. You're going to get killed.
That's you know what, John? That's fair, and you might be right with the numbers for Liga MX. I probably should sort of be careful there because that is more popular than the Premier League in the States. So you're right about that. I thank you for correcting me on that. Paramount Plus announces that they have brought in the Argentina Soccer League, the Brazilian Soccer League. They obviously have all the massive Champions League programming. So, like, John, like, I feel like in the next, like, 10, 15 years, like, this is going to be a fascinating media conversation about all these different places that now have these have put their foot in the ground with streaming services going after all these soccer rights, which they clearly feel provides massive value for their streaming property.
Yeah, what I found surprising about that Paramount Plus video yesterday was, of course the NFL is popular, but, you know, CBS has, they have the SEC college football, they have, the Masters, they have the PGA Tour. They said their UEFA deal was the second most popular sport in terms of driving subscriptions, only to the NFL, which surprised me. I think that, you know, one thing that TV executives have figured out about soccer is that it has a very passionate fan base that want to see it. One of the problems with soccer is that there are so many different leagues out there, so it's hard to amass really huge audiences for television because everybody's sort of interested in, you know, Serie A or in the Premier League or in and there's not as much crossover as they want. So for a TV sport that is trying to draw massive audiences, it just hasn't worked well for decades. It's always been the next big thing, and it just hasn't been there. But for like a streaming service, if I'm into Serie A, I am going to pay whatever it takes in order to get Serie A, which I believe is with ESPN Plus, or UEFA with Paramount Plus, you know, or to throw Peacock in there, the Premier League. Just because I'm a passionate fan. So that's it works. It seems to be a sport that works much better for streaming than it would for over there or cable TV.
Well, I will say, John, it if you are a soccer fan who likes all the leagues or who wants all that product, it's going to cost you a fortune, which sucks. Given the setup, in some ways, for budgets, if you're a diehard fan, you're probably going to have to make a choice, right? Like, you're either getting Peacock because you like the Premier League or Paramount Plus because you want Champions League.
People used to describe me as a corporate shill, Richard, because I love the cable bundle. The cable bundle, everything was sort of in there. It was easy, and we just want to pay for what we want. Well, this is what happens when you just want to pay for what you want. It's all over the place, and it makes it much, much more difficult and much, much more costly, I think.
We are in the a la carte world, that's for sure. All right, last thing, John. If you're making predictions, I think it's very clear that CBS for sure, nothing changes. They have Sunday. NBC for sure, nothing changes. They have Sunday Night Football. Fox, you believe, ultimately returns on Sunday. If ESPN makes it work, they have Monday Night Football, and I imagine you'll predict they're part of the Super Bowl rotation. So really, John, the in terms of like a night of the week, the real wild card here is Thursday, and what happens in terms of the, for lack of a better word, the over-the-air component, right? Like, we may sort of be on Thursday nights where Amazon, in theory, has exclusivity. And if you don't have Amazon Prime, you cannot watch that NFL game unless you're in that home market.
One thing that the NFL will not go back on is for the home markets, it will be on a local broadcast station in the home market. So that's the case when on Monday Night Football, when ESPN has it, that's going to be certainly be the case on any kind of streaming service that has it. It was the case for Amazon's only exclusive game, which was on in Phoenix and San Francisco as well. I think that the main wild card that I'm looking for is what happens with NFL Network and how many games do they get, and also who produces these games. Is Amazon all of a sudden going to have to get a production facility? Because they've had CBS produce the one Amazon exclusive game. All the NFL Network games are produced by CBS or Fox. So if they don't have the rights to Thursday Night Football, that's going to be a tough conversation to have, and that's going to be somewhat costly for Amazon to have to, get a build up a production team from almost from scratch.
Yeah, and then the last, John, before I let you go, we're doing all these negotiations, featuring billions of dollars are happening amid COVID, and we still don't know what next September, October will bring in terms of the ability to have full staffs at stadiums. Can their sideline reporters be on the field? How much of this will they do remote versus on site? Eventually, knock on wood, the NFL will sort of be broadcast as we have all known it to be. But 2021 is once again going to be, I think, a very challenging year for the networks that broadcast NFL football.
It will be, but one thing that they realized with the NFL was down regular season, I think about 7% this season. Everything else on TV was down like double digits, and other sports were down even more than that, not more than double digits. But the NFL, despite the downfall in subscribers that they had last season, proved that it is even more so, more powerful as a programming genre than anything else on television, which is why you're seeing these numbers just go through the roof.
Yeah, I mean, they're, again, all the people who sort of, and John, we both remember this, 5 years ago, 8 years ago, sort of talked about the decline in the NFL, and the NFL will not be as valuable in 2025 as it is in 2000. It's just, until things massively change culturally about what people think of that, that game and that product, nothing's going to change. And that's, again, people can have a fair discussion on the safety of the game and the health of the game and parents putting their kids into football at 11, 10, 12, but literally nothing, no data has ever come about to say that the game is less popular. And I would even argue that probably gambling and some other forces will make the game more popular as we head forward. Is there anything else you want to add before I let you go?
Yeah, at some point, those naysayers are going to be right. Boxing is no longer the most popular. Horse racing no longer is as popular. At some point, they're going to be right. They're just not right now, and they're not going to be right probably 8 years from now.
I don't think they're going to honestly be right in our lifetime, me and you. I do think that, it's a foolish proposition to say what will be the most popular sport in the United States of America in, like, the year 2100. But, the American public, John, they do like they like sports that are physical. They like sports that are violent. That, I don't know if it's human nature or something. That's just part of it. So I can't see the NFL not being a significant part of American culture for the next 100 years. But you're not wrong in the sense that, like, once upon a time, 100,000 people watched the Kentucky Derby, right? Or maybe they still do. But you know what I'm saying? Yeah, 100,000 people, could fill. Could fill some mega arena to watch Joe Louis versus Max Schmeling, and we live in a different world now. But that sport is, you have to admit, John, that sport is starting from such a high place in a media age. It would take a long time for it to be reduced, in my opinion.
2100, my bet's on Kittich. Is that how you pronounce it? Quidditch?
Quidditch, John. Come on. I know your kids are much older than mine now, John, but come on. You got to know your Harry Potter a little bit here.
I think Maryland is in the top 10 of Quidditch teams.
Is that true?
I don't know. I made that up.
Look at the Terps. I still like Brenda Fries, though. I'm a Brenda Fries fan. I like her as a coach. All right. John Oren is the, I'm just going to call you the senior writer, John. John Oren is a senior writer for Sports Business Daily, Sports Business Journal. I think his formal title is actually media writer. And you can check out his work on that site. Follow John on Twitter. John will probably be doing another podcast in the next 3 minutes. He's America's podcast guest, so you could probably hear his work on that format as well. And John, as always, thank you for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast.
Thanks for having me, RD.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to John Oren for coming on and talking about the NFL media rights today. Very interesting. He's done great reporting on that. He's been one of the newsbreakers there, so props to him on that. Previous podcast guests include Steve Levy of ESPN, who came on and discussed his Monday Night Football experience and wanting and feeling like his team had earned the right to come back. Very honest and interesting conversation. I appreciate his time. We did an examination of Super Bowl viewership with John Oren and Austin Karp. Check that out. Chelsea James of the Washington Post and Donovan Bennett of Sportsnet were the guests before that. And then we had Rhiannon Walker and Britt Giroli, my colleagues at The Athletic, and Jane McManus, my longtime friend. They talked about the Jared Porter story with the Mets and sexual harassment for female sports reporters. An important conversation, and I really appreciate those three women's honesty and coming on that day. As always, my thanks to Patrick Antonini and Sean Cherry for producing this podcast. If you like it, please give us a 5-star review and some comments in the comment section. They really help, certainly, with my podcast company, Canis 13. Speaking of my podcast company, my thanks to Chris Corcoran, Spencer Brown, and John McDermott, and everybody else working behind the scenes. And thank you for listening. Appreciate it. Never take it for granted. We'll see you soon. This is Richard Deitch on the Sports Media Podcast.